We were so close. Oh my goodness, that one was so close. Kraken did such a fantastic job there late, didn't they, Afra, as they tried to come back and tie that game up. I mean, that was so close. Get the penalty at the end, be able to go 6-on-4. Oh, it just barely got away. Barely got away. Great effort from the Kraken today, though. I mean, they're facing the Oilers, historically struggle against the Oilers. Matinee game on the weekend, historically struggle in matinee games on the weekend. But the Kraken just played fantastic throughout this one. This was a huge, huge full game, complete game, big team effort. Everybody was getting going. I mean, I still think that this maybe more boring style of hockey is still probably what's best for them. And I think in the long run, it'll lead to more successful games than this. But Kraken still, I mean, they put on a hell of a push there late. Heck of a push. I mean, they were all over it. Just unfortunate, unable to fully get it and tie it up, send it to overtime, all that kind of stuff where, could have at least picked up a point, would have been nice in the standings. But I'd take the good effort against a good team. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. But I think that this was still a lot of good things to talk about from this one, despite the fact that the end result wasn't what we wanted. Thanks to everybody for joining us here at Emerald City Hockey Post Game Live. RJ should be with us in a little bit. Of course, shout out our sponsor, Flatstick Pub, for sponsoring this post game live as well as all the other post game lives this season. I want to remind everybody, if you're at the game, you're leaving that game at Climate Pledge, not a long journey over to the South Lake Union location for Flatstick Pub. You could get $1 off beer, stay, play some games, play some duffelboard, play some mini golf, have a good time over there at Flatstick. So definitely go and check that out, especially if you're at the game. You can take advantage of that $1 off beer special. And then for everybody else, let's get into it here in the comments section, right? I mean, Zoe, that was quite the game. It was. I mean, this was a big time, like fun, exciting game, start to finish. Reminded me a lot of the previous games, but roles reversed, right? Like this felt like the Kraken were the Penguins. They come out of the gate storming. I mean, they're going in. They're getting grade A chances against Stuart Skinner, who had to step up and make phenomenal saves to keep the Oilers in the game. Very similar to how Philip Grubauer had to do the same last game against the Penguins. Kraken were just all over the Oilers in the offensive zone, able to get a lot of stuff going there, just not quite able to get on the scoreboard. And then ultimately Edmonton's able to score first, kind of take some of that. They slowly built up over the course of the game, got better and better as it went on. The Kraken at times petered off. I feel like they put on a really big push in the third period though. And that was great to see from the Kraken, but yes, lots of echoes from the previous game here, only on the other side of things, which, it means the team played better, but also you ended up with the loss. I don't know which of those two things is better. Schultz here with the super chat. Thank you very much. With the hole the Kraken put themselves in, honorable losses aren't as okay as they might have been earlier in the season. I'm with you. That is still the problem. You're still 7 back. Nashville's playing right now. St. Louis and Minnesota are playing each other. So one of those two teams has to win. One of them has to lose, but one of them has to get 2 points. And yeah, you're still 7 points back. This was one of the games in hand on Nashville. You're not picking it up, right? Like, so there's a downside to it, and that is that they lost. I'm with you. It was a great effort, all that stuff, but at the end of the day, they lost. They can't really afford to lose at all anymore. Like, that's the situation they're in. You have to assume that every loss could really hurt you in the long run. But I much prefer them losing a close 2-1 game, playing the style that I think is better for them long term. And that they can have more success with, that they're going to be able to win the, 70%+ of games that they're going to have to win down the stretch. They still stuck with that. It was a close game, good against a good team. I'll take it. Lindsay, you've heard of the Grinch who stole Christmas. Now get ready for the Oilers who ruined Kraken Day. I know, Lindsay. Why? Why'd they have to do that? This was our day. 3-2. It's our day. 32nd franchise of the NHL. This is our day. They had to come in and hand us our first L. I mean, look, I guess it wasn't going to last forever. As much as I wanted 100 years from now, the Kraken to continue to win on March 2nd, probably wasn't going to last forever. It's unfortunate. Unfortunate for sure. Nicole, the talent disparity is off the charts. High-end talent. That being said, Kraken have always done a really good job of keep, keeping Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid from just absolutely like slaughtering us, right? Like they've done a really good job of keeping them from doing that the way they tend to do against other teams. So I give Kraken a lot of credit there. Look, Kraken did what they needed to do. They had more expected goals in this one. They had the same game plan. It was try to keep Edmonton to the outside. There was a couple times they were able to get in on Grubauer, but for the most part, they kept Edmonton to the outside. It's exactly what we talked about. Let Philip Grubauer see a bunch. They let him face enough shots. He was always kind of staying in the rhythm of the game. He made some huge saves in this one. This is very much the defensive game plan that they need to have. It's just that, yes, Kraken, on the flip side, they need to score. And you probably need to score two goals every game to be in it, playing the way that they're playing defensively. And it would just be nice to have that like kind of go-to player that could just get it done for us. You know what I mean? But we've talked at length about that. Byron, I don't love that the Oilers don't seem to be trying for a lot of this game and the Kraken still couldn't score. Yeah, I mean, look, the Kraken put on the huge push at the beginning. I see it from Ryan here. Great game, got Skinnered. That's the tale of this game. Kraken had two phenomenal chances right at the very beginning of this game, just minutes into it, right? Yanni Gourde got one, and who had the other one? It was so far back at the beginning of the game. It was Yanni Gourde and Jordan Eberle, right? They get two fantastic chances at the beginning of this game that Stuart Skinner had no business making saves on, but he made the save. And that kind of was when I was like, uh-oh, I saw this game last game, only we were reversed. That was Grubauer making those saves. And it was kind of, you know, whatever. So it's unfortunate, but the Kraken were doing the right things. They were getting net front. They were getting to Stuart Skinner. They were getting to these places where they're in and around the crease. The Edmonton defense didn't really know how to handle them, especially when they had multiple bodies in there. These are all still recipes for success in the long run. There will always be days in which the goaltender is able to make the couple saves that he needs to make. There's going to be days where the other team is just, you know, able to score on you. I think this one was the day where the goaltender was able to make the saves that he needed to make. But the Kraken, I just love how many shots they're taking in and around the crease. They're really trying to manufacture goals. It is the key in the long run, especially as, you know, Philip Grubauer is going to play the way he's playing. The defense is going to give him the opportunities to steal games for the Kraken, right? The opportunities where he's only going to allow, you know, one or two goals a game. This is still the formula. I've seen it work for so many teams before. I really believe this is the best chance for the Kraken down the stretch. Obviously, the coaching staff feels that way too. It's just every so often we're going to run into one of these games. I just wish it wasn't this early on. You know what I mean? Young agreeing here. Skinner is just too good. It was just tough that was the case here. B, Oilers curse plus matinee curse plus Saturday home game curse equals super curse on the Kraken, doomed from the start. Lol. They played really well though, and despite all of the curses, despite the fact that they had everything in the universe working against them, the Kraken did really, really well. Again, this was a fantastic game. They play a month ago. I don't think this game goes the way it did. I don't think the Kraken are in it as much as they were in it. I think this was a phenomenal effort. Again, that new strategy, that new look for the Kraken, this is where it's at. And as Viren pointing out, no hat tricks, no points for Kane, Fogle, or Hyman, so I'll take the small wins. Exactly. Like they have adjusted. They were able to keep those guys to the outside. How many times was it with Evander Kane or Zach Hyman? They were killing us by being in and around the goaltender. I talked about it last post game. They were always in and around Philip Grubauer, Joey Decord, Martin Jones last year. Like that was always how Edmonton really got to us. And they were able to get 4, 5, 6 goals against us. Kraken did such a good job of limiting those chances for those guys. They were not letting them work to the interior of the Kraken defense. They weren't letting them get to the crease where they really are successful. And that's why I'm saying that the defense, these last two games, just night and day from what we had been seeing from the Kraken when we had talked about all of their defensive struggles. Remember, that was just like the tail of the tape every game. It was what's going on with the defense. That's gone right now. They are just playing super well, very well structured. Keep everything to the outside. Keep plays in front of you. It's phenomenal work that the defensive unit is doing right now for the Kraken. And Byron pointed out also, no empty net goal. That was nice too. That was especially nice. Definitely happy about that. Christian, I blame it on 32 Bar and Grill not having 32 cent wings. That's it right there. That was the one curse, the one, like, you know, supernatural element we could have had in our favor against all of the other curses, and just wasn't able to get it done. From AK here, excellent play on Kraken's behalf. That goaltender Skinner just would not be denied. Good game by Gru, but I do believe Kraken's season may be over. I think it's still a little early for that. Give them, you know, certainly through the trade deadline. But yes, every loss from here on out is going to be tough. It's going to be, you know, that much tougher to work past for sure. Got a super chat here from the Kraken fan page official. Never heard John, Edzo, and JT complain so much about no calls. Refs suck today. That being said, not the reason for the L. Good effort from the boys. Huge game next against the Flames. Go Kraken. Yeah, there was some stuff in this one, but not anything too egregious. I mean, Kraken walked away with more power play opportunities than the Oilers, which is what you always want the situation to be. You never want to be giving the Oilers and their power play unit any chances at all. And the Kraken able to get a power play goal in this one too, right? Kind of continue the special teams work that they've been working on and improving. And the power play looked pretty good in this one, especially late. I mean, they were really able to generate a lot of chances with that 6-on-4 at the end of the game. So yeah, I know they can get pretty vocal, especially Edzo. I mean, that's a reputation he has, is he could get pretty vocal about that stuff during, you know, when he's not doing national games, when he's doing local games, that can be a thing with him. But yeah, it was, I don't know. I feel like it could have been worse. Like you said, it's not the reason for the loss in this one. Like, officiating, I don't think was the end all be all. And thank you for the super chat. B, it's like the Cartier-Yanni-Tolvin line. I like the Cartier-Yanni-Tolvin in line a lot, though. It's probably just because until Berkey comes back, but I still think it works well. I think, yes, it's going to be that way until Berkey comes back. We'll see how long that is. It was a good sign that he was out there skating with everybody at practice yesterday. That is definitely positive, because when we got the day-to-day, what does that really mean? We've heard that with Berkey before. It does mean good things that Berkey's skating well, but like I said last time, I really like Cartier with Yanni. I just feel like they click in a lot of ways. They can both be guys that really drive the net, as the Kraken are focused again on doing that. If you watch a lot of times when that line out there, Cartier, Yanni, they're in and around the crease, sucking in a bunch of defenders because they're trying to move them. They're trying to let their goaltender get line of sight. And that really gives Elie Tolvanen a lot of time and space with which to work. And you can tell that he got a lot more work in. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen so many close calls from Tolvanen shooting the puck, and obviously he was able to get the goal. But I really feel like this is a good recipe for that line, just because Cartier and Yanni are so similar in their way that they want to go and kind of stir up some trouble net front. They're very north-south players, right? Just head towards the crease. And I really do like that kind of combination from the two of them there. Let's see. Ryan, moral victory. Unfortunately, we need a real one. I know. Let's see. John, I'm guessing this puts us on trade watch. I think we're always going to be on trade watch. I think every loss certainly points more and more in that direction. One of the things that I noticed, as RJ was tweeting out which scouts were in attendance tonight, or today, I should say, Tampa Bay had two scouts in attendance again. They had two scouts last game. They had two scouts this game. Justin Schultz to Tampa, maybe, right? Tampa needs defense with the Mikhail Sergachev injury that happened a couple weeks ago. They need defenders. I'm wondering if they're there watching Justin Schultz. I mean, I'm sure they're watching like Pittsburgh last game and they're watching Edmonton today. But I really do wonder if Tampa having two scouts in the building is in part because they're really taking a long look at Justin Schultz. Maybe Wenberg too. But I think really what Tampa needs help with right now is more so on the blue line. But yeah, interesting stuff. Let's see. Is it too early to start talking about next season from Nicole? Yes, it's one loss, everybody. They were doing so well. What happened to all the positivity from 2 days ago? I know. What do you make of the scouting contingent at today's game? Well, there we go. I just answered that question. I think the fact that Tampa was there with two people again, that stood out to me. That really stood out to me. Sam, gonna watch T-Birds in person later on today. Really looking forward to it. Ooh, that sounds like a lot of fun. I hope you have a wonderful time, Sam. Really, really fun stuff there. Sean, it was really good last game. Fun finish. Sure needed at least one point there, though. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, last game was a lot of fun. This one was a lot of fun. Like, there's some fun stuff here. Cappy, we won more face-offs than the other team. Well, okay, well, that's what doomed us. We won too many face-offs. As those of you know how I am about that. But yeah, I like that. Sam, boys sure like to make decisions as complicated as possible right before the trade deadline. I agree with you. I mean, this is the way the team has played all year, up, down, win, lose, you know, go on a little losing streak, go on a win streak and counteract, just end up 500. No matter what you do, we're going to end up 500. And that really doesn't help you as you're, you know, a week away from the trade deadline. It's not great. It doesn't help out your general manager that much. Let's see. Lindsay, Yanni Gord nearly getting the shorty with McDavid all over him was cool. You just know Tampa wants him back. I'm sure they do. And that's why I could see them maybe being interested in a Wennberg, just because he could fill a similar role for them as a shutdown defensive center, which they've missed not having Yanni Gord, that's for sure. Stratic, as well as the Kraken played, it felt like the Oilers didn't start taking the game very seriously until they finally got scored on. I think they started in the second period. I would argue the first period Oilers were just not there. Like I said, similar to the Kraken last game, they just weren't ready for it. They weren't stepping up. They weren't getting anything going. And then I feel like the Oilers started to get going from that point on. I think that's why you get the Draisaitl goal there in the second period. And then really they really started going after it. And then, you know, they really did turn it on late in the game. Like, they didn't want to give the Kraken the chance to pull the goaltender, right? Like, that was clearly a thing that they had in mind, was if we can just pin this down in the Kraken zone and not give them a chance to pull Philip Grubauer, and we can just kind of ice the game that way, that's the way they wanted to go about it. And credit to them, they did a really good job of it. Kraken were pretty, like, defenseless. They were unable to get out of their own zone there for, like, 3 minutes straight. Like, it was really, really rough to watch, actually. Let's see. Why are Oilers fans such sore winners, or is that all Canadian fan bases? Good game, though. Can't complain about that. But got to sell a little at the deadline from Barfugol. Yeah, Oilers fans could be that way. A lot of Canadian fans, a lot of fan bases could be that way. I was going to say Canadian fan bases, but we've run into that with, like, Colorado fans and everything in here, and Vegas fans, of course. I just think every fan base has those people in it. Just, I think that's the way it is. Let's see. Let's see. I just answered that question. Coop reiterating Stratic's question there. Pretty sure that's a Canadian fan base issue from Sean. Let's see. Go on to Leafs or Canucks board. You'll see delusional and Uri from Ricky for sure. I wanted a Yams goal against his former team from Matty. I did too. And he had that fabulous look on the power play. How awesome was it? Okay. On the power play, they've got their traditional setup, the 1-3-1 setup. Yams is playing in the bumper slot. I forget who it was. I wasn't really able to see the jersey number, who was kind of down below the goal line. I would guess probably Alexander Wennberg, but he made such a fantastic pass over to Yams, who was playing, like, low in the bumper. He was really coming in on Stuart Skinner, and he just wasn't quite able to get a hold of it as the pass came over. So he just kind of whiffed on the shot, but that chance was so perfect. Like, it was one of those, you know, after you watch, you know, hockey for a little while, you can kind of start to see things before it happens. You can kind of just get this feeling, this sense in the air, and you can just see how something's developing, right? You see a guy go to pass, your eye scans over, and you see the player stepping up, ready to take the shot, and you're just like, okay, something's going to happen here. I was totally having that. I thought a goal was going to be scored in that moment, 1,000%, and then Yams just wasn't quite able to handle the pass. But it was that close, Matty, and I was really pulling for him too, because I thought that would have been fantastic to get Yamamoto back on the board. Oh, that would have been really, really fun. Oh, so much fun. Let's see. He almost had the deflection on the Tolvi goal. That too. I mean, he had a good game all the way around. He had a really good game. Just curious, thoughts on Berkey being a trade piece from y'all? It's not going to happen. Just given how injured he's been, I can't imagine a team wanting to trade for him. And then to the contract, especially given how injured he is, I don't know many teams that would want to take on that contract, just given the production he's had since he's been in Seattle. That could change really quick if, say, next year he comes out of the gate really hot and you know, he looks like he's back and he's, you know, fulfilling all of the promises that you know, kind of had coming to Seattle. But given how much term is going to be left on that deal, I don't see anything happening there. And just the fact that it hasn't been a great time for him in Seattle, right? He's either struggled, with the production, or he's been injured through so much of it. But yes, I mean, next, he's got 3 years left on that deal after this year. Teams aren't usually in a rush to get a mid-level contract with that much term on their books. It's just not something you really see in the NHL these days. If you notice, all the mid-level deals, you'll trade for a really good player with a high cap hit and a lot of term left. You'll trade for a bottom six guy with some term left, or same with defensemen. You don't see teams trading for guys making 5.5 with 3 years left on their contracts. That doesn't happen anymore. That's just not the way the league works in the salary cap world. Nobody wants to commit that much money on a trade piece unless it's they know they're trading for a core piece of their future. And I don't think any team right now would view Berkey as such, unfortunately. Laura, petition to let no one win the Blues versus Wild game. I would sign that in a heartbeat right now, Laura, if it was possible. I would be right there with you. Let's see. So glad we have Tolvi. He does so much. Really good overall player from Sean. He does. He's a phenomenal 200-foot player. I mean, that's what's been so impressive about him, and still why I'm scratching my head why it didn't work for him in Nashville. Because Elli Tolvanen, he's such a good forechecker. He can go into the corners. He can dig the puck out. He can bang bodies and be physical with a defenseman. Obviously, we know the skilled aspect of it, too, when in the offensive zone, when you give him the time and space that Cartier and Yanni have been able to give him. But then back-checking, too. I mean, he back-checks really hard. He's able to get back there and stop passes or help cover if a defenseman pinches up in the offensive zone. With that line, Elli Tolvanen's always the guy who gets back. He's just always the guy covering for that defenseman when a defenseman pinches up and that line is out there. And he does a pretty good job of it, like a fairly decent job for a guy that you wouldn't, think of as a two-way winger, 200-foot winger, because you think of him more so for his scoring prowess. And that's really impressive stuff there, too. So I'm big fan of Elli Tolvanen there all the way around. Got RJ here ready to join us. Let's bring him in. RJ, how's it going? Good to have you back.
Yeah, good to be back. As everyone can probably tell, my voice isn't 100% back, but enough to kind of play through it. It was totally gone the other night. So thank you, Dylan, for holding things down after the Pittsburgh game. Sorry I couldn't join everyone then.
No, it's all right. What was your big takeaways from this one, RJ?
I mean, this one is just, it's such a tough game because I thought the Kraken played well. I thought they outplayed Edmonton. I was really impressed by the effort tonight. And I wasn't really sure what to expect going into this kind of a matinee start against an opponent they always seem to struggle against. And the effort was there all 60 minutes. I mean, they were trying and clawing to score. The forecheck was on top of the Oilers. And if you look at the two times where they were beaten on goals, that, yes, there was an all-world pass from Connor McDavid over to Leon Draisaitl. I mean, that's just a heck of a play. And then, that Kulak point shot that unfortunately, Grubauer maybe just an inch off, might have been playing it for the tip. But like, that's not one where I'm just like, guys, you got to focus. What are you doing? That's just kind of a, I don't know what else you want the five skaters out there to do on a play like that. And so, these points are so important. I mean, you really can't afford to lose these points, but I don't know what more you could want from the effort the Kraken gave to me.
Yeah, most of what chat's been talking about is just the fact that like this is where not having that really dynamic finisher, that person you can count on offensively to help kind of put you over the top, comes in. The difference in talent level between the Oilers and the Kraken when you play kind of a lower event, more stifling defensive game, grinded out offensively. I still think, though, this is the recipe for success. This is the game that they should be playing the rest of the way. And I think that this game is a good example of that, too, because, I mean, this is the closest effort we've had against Edmonton in a while, it feels like.
Right. It feels better than a lot of the other Oilers Kraken games. And if you just have this effort, you play this way for 60 minutes against most teams, you're going to get the 2 points most of the time.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, it's good for them to light a fire there for you there, RJ.
Yes. Keep you warm. Be nice and warm. Yeah. Just get loud too. That's nice.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see, Sam, between Schultz, Winnie, and Ebbs, who are the scouts paying attention to the most? I kind of agree here with B. I think Ebbs is the guy other teams want the most, but Schultz is the most likely to actually be traded. That's the way I feel. You and I were texting about it. I had already brought it up on here. The fact that Tampa back-to-back games with two scouts in the building, Tampa needs a defender, RJ.
Yeah, Schultz would be the name there, I think, if Tampa's the interested team. And yeah, I think a lot of teams want Eberle, but I think the Kraken are really reluctant to move him.
Yeah. Coop, I'm pretty sure it'll have to be mathematically eliminated for RJ and Dylan to say we need to sell. They are the eternal optimists. Look, we got to keep things, positive. And like, we've talked about their options when it comes to selling. Like, they're not likely to make the playoffs. Like, we're real about that. Yeah. I just don't know that what you're going to get for selling those pieces, if they want to go anyway. If you're working on something long term with Eberle, it doesn't make sense to do that. I don't know that you're really getting that much for these guys, given the way it seems like the trade market's kind of cooled off here, RJ.
Right. I mean, you know, limited sample size with maybe the Tanev deal kind of throwing some cold water on the trade market. But I mean, I think, you know, if this franchise has been around for 10 years and we're just talking about an average season, I would be all for selling off. But as part of that larger conversation that we'll have on the next deep dive.
Yes.
In the greater context of things right now for this organization, I don't think it makes sense.
No, it doesn't make sense for them to go full rebuild, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Justin Schultz trade, we've talked about. We're on board with that. Get Riker Evans in there, all that kind of stuff. Like, we're absolutely there. Rogue Wave Creative, apologies if this is a question that's been asked a lot. It's fair to say the Kraken will have to really win a lot to even sniff a playoff spot. Why do you think Francis thought that the shooting percentage would continue this season so hard for it to be sustainable? I don't think that he did. I think that they looked, and we did the same thing over the course of this offseason, RJ, where we knew that the shooting percentage was going to drop, but we looked at areas like the power play where the Kraken could potentially make up that kind of that loss in production goal-wise. And to some extent, the Kraken power play has been better than last year. They have scored more goals there. If you look at individual players, they've been able to kind of do that same thing. But I think, you know, it was just a situation where the Kraken didn't have a ton of money to work with last offseason. They had the big priority of re-signing Vince Dunn, that kind of thing. And that's just where they were at. There wasn't like a big fish they could really go out and get and that they had a chance at either.
Right. And the goaltending as well, because you look at the Kraken's goalie numbers and they were not great last season. And so you figured if that could just get a little bit better too, you probably don't have to score as many goals.
Yep. Lindsay, question. Would it be possible for us to trade Eberle at the deadline with a handshake agreement to re-sign him if he wants for next year? He could chase a cup but keep his family here. I think you've touched on this before, RJ. Teams have done that in the past, but a lot of times once that player leaves, it doesn't materialize that they come back later.
Right. It is rare that a player will come back, even if there's the high hopes for it at the time of the trade. It just, you don't see it very often.
Yeah. Let's see. Hope they go for a young player over a draft pick. They should be in their window before a pick is ready, from Ricky. I'm kind of thinking the same thing. Like, I think that is something. I don't know that we'll see it, just because at the deadline it always gets tough. You don't want to not make a deal as the clock gets, you know, more and more constrictive of you, just because you're arguing over a prospect. So I don't know that we would see that kind of from this point forward, RJ, but I do think long term that is kind of the mentality that Ron Francis should have, is maybe go for guys a little further along their development path instead of just a straight up dart throw.
Right. And I think that's ideally what you want to do. I mean, that's why buying teams that are more hesitant to give up players like that, they're much more willing to kind of part with a draft pick, because it's nobody specific. And especially if you're under the gun, if you don't have the leverage, you know, you're probably ending up with draft picks.
Yeah. Light with the super chat here. This loss sucks, especially given we are definitely going to be moving to sell as a result. In a season where the beginning wasn't marred with bad luck, maybe it'd be different on to the next game. I mean, do you get the sense that just because this is another loss, RJ, that it's just kind of over?
No, I don't. I certainly don't think the team feels that way. I mean, Hackstall, I think he only took two questions, because he kind of summed everything up in those two questions. But basically, he was really proud of the team's effort, just said, you know, they've got some skilled guys and their guy between the pipes is really good. But he pointed the team's record recently, said we were 5-1-1 going into this one. You know, we just have to get ready and go back to collecting those points. So it didn't certainly sound like, you know, he feels, again, he seems confident with the way the team's playing. Tolvanen seems confident. Schwartz seems confident. Those were the two that we talked to afterward. I did see Ron Francis walk into the room right after, as I was actually heading into the locker room. You know, he didn't seem like, he didn't look, you know, his face didn't look like a guy who was like, oh, sell it all, it's over. So, you know, I don't think they're there quite yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you pick up the eternal optimism stuff from us, know that we pick it up from the team. Like, yes. There's definitely a trickle-down effect of that, too. When it
And comes ultimately,
to
they're the guys making the decisions.
Yes, yeah. So, you know, some of it is we're also working around if we don't think that they're going to do something, we're not going to spend too much time on it. We'll explore it, but we don't want to bet everything on it either, just if we're not getting that vibe from the people who would be making it. Elizabeth, who would we get in return for Schultz? And then just to add on to that, Coop, hey, Dylan, you weren't in an armchair GM chat last week. RJ said we could get a first for Ebbs and a second for Winnie or Schultz. I took that as gospel. I'm kind of with you on that, with the return for Schultz. This is because earlier RJ said I didn't think we could get a first for Winnie or Schultz, which I think fits in. I left Eberle out of that when I said I don't think we'd get a first for anybody, Coop, because it really doesn't sound like Eberle's going anywhere. Just how much chatter there has been about them re-signing him and him just flat out saying he doesn't want to, which I think means something to Ron Francis. So then I'm kind of there with you. I think a second rounder, to answer Elizabeth's question, is probably the appropriate thing to expect for Justin Schultz.
Yeah, I do think that's best case, worst case is a third, but somewhere either a second or a third.
As I go to check to see what draft picks the Tampa Bay Lightning still have, RJ, because boy, they don't have many these days. Yeah, they don't have a first or a second. So they don't have a fourth either. So wouldn't it be something if they traded a third for Justin Schultz and just didn't pick until round five this year?
I mean, when you're in your window.
Yeah. Let's see. Rebuild. They haven't built anything yet. Let's have a look at a few rookie classes at least. They've built something and they are getting there. And we're starting to see more and more that the young guys contribute at higher and higher levels. Anthony, based on the numbers against Calgary, guessing Hack goes Joey Monday and Grubauer Tuesday. Have you seen anything different from Gruby post return or just better defense? Would you care to hit on any of that first?
Right. I mean, I haven't seen anything too different from his own play. I mean, he just looks like the kind of, you know, dialed in Grubauer we've come to expect after the first season, right? And when the defense plays well in front of him, you know, he feeds off of it, right? Last game against Pittsburgh, that was the perfect example. That was the Joey Decord defense that we saw leading to Joey's great numbers. And hey, look, Grubauer plays great behind that defense too. Lots of shots, but all low quality. He had a chance on pretty much all of them. And, you know, tonight he was given the chance on most of the Oilers' opportunities he was able to stop. So I think he still looked good.
Yeah, and not only are they low-quality shots, you know, kept to the outside, but he can see them all. He doesn't have people in his face. There's nobody in his crease. I really think that's the big difference between this game, RJ, and the last couple games where we've played against the Oilers, where Evander Kane or Zach Hyman and all those guys have kind of given us fits. They've all given us fits by being in the crease, right? Like, that's where they're scoring their goals. Net side, net front, all that kind of stuff. Doesn't exist right now. The way the defense is playing, they've structurally got back to where they were when they went on that big win streak, which was keep people away from the goaltender, let the goaltender work, let him see the puck, and then he'll stop the puck. Like, that's their job. And if we do our job to let them do their job, then the system works. And I think that's really where they're at right now. But good question there, Anthony. As far as which goaltender for which day next week, do you think he sticks with Grubauer because he's had two good games and so he just gives him the next available, RJ? Do you think he gives him the extra day of rest? Does he just go based on career splits?
I mean, I think he treated it similarly with Joey earlier this season, where just whoever he feels like is playing better right now, you can get every game because we need every point we can get. So it wouldn't surprise me, although if it was me, I'd go Joey Calgary.
Yeah. Super chat here from Light. Pessimistic Light in this economy? I guess so. Everybody can have one day. You get one day of pessimism. This is yours, Light. That's the way it goes. And then super chat here from that Kraken fan page official. Joey getting a break or getting a timeout after the Wild game? Also, do we keep both these goalies next year? Yes, you're keeping both these goalies next year. No question about that. I think he's just getting a break because he played so much. Like, he was burning out, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it for a while, even while he was still playing tons of games. Like, Joey needs a break. Now is the time. Grubauer's playing well, too. There's no rush to get him back in. It just makes sense.
Yeah, and Dalen flew down from Edmonton to watch the Kraken at Climate Pledge Arena. Fantastic atmosphere and fans. It did not disappoint. Go Kraken. So glad you had a fantastic time. That is awesome to hear. Oh, that must have been so much fun. First Kraken game, close game like this, midday game. Did they have the window open at all?
Nope. As you can see behind me, it's closed. For warm-ups, it was open. So at least okay, there was that.
Yeah. So you got to see it open a little bit there, the kind of the fun, unique feature of it. That's a lot of fun. But yes, definitely, I think this would be a good game for that. Let's see. Superfly, the Kraken played the way they have to, low event, low scoring, but they just can't score at all this season. Time to sell, Ronnie. It's just the name of the game, RJ. I mean, I think they had the opportunities in this one, right? Yanni Gourde and Jordan Eberle at the beginning of this game, just Stuart Skinner steps up, makes those two huge saves. I still think like you can grind it out, try to find goals. We all know that they need an elite goal scorer. Like this is no secret. None of us should be coming to that now, but it is just one of those things where you just think if you just had another Jared McCann equivalent player on this team, how many of these one gold games are different? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it would make all the difference in a game like today's. I mean, just one more bounce, one more time where a player can just kind of take over. And you know, we've seen that. We saw that with McDavid Dreisaitl in this one, right? With the Oilers' first goal. They just took over in that moment. And sometimes that makes all the difference. This one, excuse me. All right, here, go ahead.
Okay. Sean here, the fact that Tampa is in their window, could that not mean that they are looking to do something a little bigger and there may be players involved? It's possible. I mean, I still think Alexander Wennberg would look good on the Lightning, RJ. Like, I really do. You think there's a chance that they could go for Wennberg and Schultz and we just do like kind of a big blockbuster with Tampa and try to get some prospects back?
Maybe. I don't know what goes the other way, though, in terms of, you know, a high-end prospect that would make it worth Ron Francis's while at that point. I mean, the more assets you have coming back to Tampa, they don't have top draft picks. So what else are you giving up?
Yeah, they don't have a first this year or next year. They don't have a second this year. Their prospect pool is not great as I'm looking at it right now. Just because, I mean, they haven't been picking for a long time, right? Like, how many years have they given up a first-round pick, you know, at trade deadlines? So, yeah, I don't know that it would make sense for them to do anything big. I think you could do a third or a next year's. I don't even know that Ron Francis would want to pick next year, though, for right. Schultz. Yeah, so
yeah. If Schultz for a third, if that's the team and the fit, it's going to be Schultz for a third.
Yeah, that's the only deal that can be made there. Gervin, yep, we're misplaying multiple players. Tatar needs to be moved up from the fourth line. Hell, Wenny is not a top two line forward. We've kind of talked about Wennberg. He is better as a third line center, just given his shutdown capabilities, the two-way play, all of that kind of stuff. Tatar, this is the problem. There was no... You need McCann up there with Eberle. We know that kind of sparked the two of them to get going. It got Matty involved more. Second line, it kind of works the way they have it set up. You're not going to have Tatar on the Yanni Gourde line. This is just the problem. There's always going to be somebody on the fourth line, whether it was Berkey, whether it was Tatar, whether it's whoever it is. There has to be somebody on the fourth line. Jaden Schwartz, like, what, you're going to stick him on the fourth line? There's just too many, RJ. There's too many guys.
Right, and that's been the issue with Tatar, whether it's here in Colorado, just over at this stage of his career, where he thrives in a top six role. He's probably better suited for a top six role based on his skill set. But you look at teams around the league and he's just not good enough to get into anybody's top six. He's not better than Jared McCann or Jordan Eberle or Jaden Schwartz or Oliver Bjorkstrand. You know, those are one of those guys he'd have to push out of the top six.
Yeah. Let's see. Maddie, do you think the extended break for Joey can do something to him psychologically, or is it just a normal part of the game? I mean, do you mean like negative, like because he's sitting, or do you think you mean like refresh, Matty? I guess either way, I just think that it's just normal.
Yeah, it's normal, especially for a goalie. You know, you're not always a starter throughout your whole career as a goaltender. He spent plenty of time as a backup, spent plenty of time going a long time between games. He's used to it. He knows what the process is.
Yeah. Lindsay, we're once again back to cloning Jared McCann. It's all come full circle.
Yep.
Just need a Jared McCann equivalent player, RJ, like a clone of Jared McCann. Sam, now that Pettersson's officially off the table, who's the next possible star on the market, or just wait and see until someone becomes cranky with their situation?
I mean, you kind of have to just wait and see, I guess. I mean, on the Armchair GM stream, we talked a little bit about Brady Tkachuk, possibly, you know, someone from Ottawa. You know, you and I have talked about Matt Barzal in the past, even though there's nothing right now that would indicate, you know, that they'd be willing to move him. You just kind of have to wait and see what opens up.
I pray every day to the hockey gods that Matt Barzal wakes up to the realization that he needs to get out of the Islanders now before his whole prime is wasted there. Unfortunately, it's not there yet. Let's see. Should the Kraken go all in for Guentzel? Maddie's asking.
No.
All right, there you go. I agree. I don't think that he would kind of solve the issues that the Kraken need. Kraken needs somebody a little bit more dynamic than Jake Guentzel, somebody a little bit more proven. And to go big money on a winger like that, I just don't think is really ultimately what they need. And a winger who hasn't totally been proven away from Crosby, Malkin, that whole situation in Pittsburgh either. That there's still an element of that that scares me. Let's see, Coop, I think it's still Reinhardt, but he's not the one I want to sign. You know, kind of talking about the top people out there. Yeah, I mean, Sam Reinhardt's going to be an unrestricted free agent this offseason. The numbers are great, but you and I know from looking at him, RJ, it is built on a house of cards of special teams play that is ridiculously unsustainable.
Right. I mean, you look at realistically what you can expect from him year in, year out. It's probably 30 goals and 70 points. You know, that's right. Probably the player he is, which, hey, I mean, there's another Jared McCann. There's your Jared McCann quote.
True.
The problem is this one's going to cost over $10 million a year.
Yes, the problem is that he's having his best season ever in a contract year. So should he hit free agency, you're going to have to way overpay for him is the problem. Because otherwise, yeah, I'd be totally on board with that. But yes, he's shooting 25%. That's completely unsustainable. He's got 23 of his 41 goals are on the power play. Only 13. He's got 5 shorties too. That's not sustainable. Only 13 even strength goals this year. That's really not a lot considered for a guy who has over 40 goals. So that scares me a lot when I look at him.
Yeah, I don't trust this Kraken power play to set him up for the kind of looks that the Panthers power play does either.
No, I think that's probably safe. Let's see, Patrick, I know I've joked about it, but if we want to focus on prospects, I feel we need to bring in an enforcer to protect them. I think that's always a good idea, kind of similar to what the Ducks did with Radko Gudas, right? Like this year, it wasn't so much about bringing in an enforcer, really also Alex Killorn. It's bringing in an enforcer, somebody who can kind of be around, but you don't totally need an enforcer in the traditional sense anymore, but you want somebody who can play physical and teach the young guys how to play physical, which I think both of those guys are doing for the Ducks. And that's what Pat Verbeek talked about. And you want somebody around who also just kind of, because those guys tend to have a certain level of motor to them. And you want to give that and have that rub off on the young kids too. You don't want Radko Gudas out there skating faster and harder than you every day in practice, right? Like nobody wants to be embarrassed like that. So you got to make sure you go out there and you put in a certain level of effort. And so I do think there is something to bringing in some of those more physical players, RJ, or even just having like a Brandon Tanev around. He kind of fills that same role where they just kind of teach guys, this is what it takes to really grind and get through it in this league.
Right. I mean, we talk about motor. You can't outdo what Brandon Tanev does in terms of motor and how hard he works. And motor wise, Yanni Gourde kind of plays a bit of that role too. But as far as the physicality, they don't have anyone who really plays that type of Radko Gudas style game. So maybe in the offseason, that's something they look at.
Yeah. Rip to the Pettersson offer sheet timeline could have been great from B.
I know. I was looking forward to it. I'm not that it would ever happen, but yeah, those dreams are dashed.
Yep. Coop, Maddie working on a shot this offseason. I'm optimistic about that too. And Shane being sick. Yeah, Shane's going to be good next year. And if Maddie does focus on his shot, maybe starts working on shooting to some different locations on the net, I think he could come out next year and really, you know, do better. I feel like he's in for some positive regression next season from where he was at this year.
Agreed. I mean, especially if he just works on that stuff offensively. The greatest ones always do that, right? They identify something in their game that needs to improve over an offseason. They work hard at it. They come back the next season way improved.
Yep. Superfly, no one in this year's free agency will improve this team enough. Also, free agency is mostly fool's gold as the best players never make it there, and you end up overpaying for those guys. Similar sentiments yes. to what I've always heard from you, RJ. Yep. RJ approves. He approves of this message.
I did go back and look at my like free agency video that I did two off seasons ago. Like, should the Kraken sign Nichushkin or Burakovsky? It was interesting to look back at that one. My answer was no to both, by the way.
Yes. Byron, are there any top wingers who don't have the quote, but how are they away from their star center problem? There are a couple. I think Willie Nylander was one of them. Obviously, like Ovechkin is, Panarin, Nikita Kucherov, Mikko Rantanen. Like there are guys that can do that. Generally, they play a more complete game, and that's how you know that they would be okay. Patrick Kane, maybe more so back in the day than now. If you see, if they are the offensive driver for their team, right? And that's usually the clue, or for their line. And that is the case for a lot of these guys that aren't always there. Matthew Tkachuk, right? Like, he's going to produce regardless of who his center is, right? That yeah. He's just built that way. Brady Tkachuk, for that matter, too. So there are plenty of wingers out there that don't have that kind of that same question. Whereas with Jake Guentzel, I don't know that I've ever seen him drive play away from those guys, right? Like, that's right. Not his game.
He's been attached to Crosby's hip for so much of his career, too. I mean, and why not? They play so well together, but it does lead to some questions.
Right. I mean, even still, right now, Sidney Crosby is putting together, like, an MVP-level season, and Jake Guentzel's barely a point-per-game player playing with him. Right. Like that also kind of tells you, what his ceiling is on his own. That's, you would like to see better numbers. He's always just been barely a point per game player, and that's playing with, one of the greatest players of the generation. So I think that's the other thing to look at too. Those other guys I was talking about, they really are able to put up a lot of points on their own or exceed, 100 points even in a season if they need to. Let's see. Some good talk about Rykov. I know I'm super excited for him, everybody. Let's see. Patrick, speaking of Turbo, he was great tonight. Is there room for him to get more minutes?
I mean, it's tough because he is playing in the bottom six. There's, as we mentioned with Tatar, there's not really any room in the top six. He played there earlier this season, but we know he just can't finish like a top six forward. I don't think you'll want that. So not really. I mean, unless the Kraken take a bunch more penalties and he's killing penalties more. But I think he's probably in the right role for him right now.
Yeah. Coop, Matty was bad at faceoffs last year, clearly focused on it in the offseason and improved leaps and bounds this year. I'm confident he'll do the same with shooting next year. He has the dangles already. And then Ricky, rather have scoring Matty Beniers than faceoff Matty Beniers. It's because he's doing the reverse Crosby, RJ. Like, this is what he's doing, right? Like, Crosby entered the league, super dynamic passer, decides he needs to focus on working on his shot. He works on his shot, becomes a great goal scorer, says, oh no, I need to focus more on defense, winning faceoffs, spends the next couple off seasons doing that, become one of the greatest faceoff guys in the league, one of the best two-way centers, if not this year, the best. Matty Beniers just doing it all backwards, focused on defense, got really good defensively, focused on faceoffs, get really good there. Like, hopefully that does mean shot is the case, and then passing will be last.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll hopefully.
We'll see. But that's Matty Beniers. He's just taking the reverse Crosby approach. It just fits his style better, I guess. Let's see. It's not star-studded, but there are many very interesting high-quality players potentially there this offseason. Talking about free agency from Striatic. It's just the problem with that is with the Kraken, it would just be more of the same. Right. Like, I don't think there's anybody out there that pulls away from the guys that the Kraken already have is the problem.
Right. I mean, the Kraken already have a ton of really solid middle tier guys. That's basically, like you said, it's more of what they have. They need somebody who's of that star level who can bump other guys, bump those middle tier guys down the lineup a little bit, too.
Yeah, there we go. Let's see. I think they signed all their 2022 second rounders last summer, so this summer would be consistent for Rykov. Yeah, that's kind of how Ron Francis has handled the second round picks. See you, Patrick. Hope you have a good rest of your day. Brent Cram, by the way, how porcelain is Berkey healing up for his next injury? Oh, brutal. Unfortunate reality, though.
Right. Well, I mean, the good news is that he did get back out onto the ice yesterday for practice in a regular jersey. So it seems like Hakstol's day-to-day estimation actually does mean day-to-day. He wasn't healthy enough to go tonight, but tonight. Got to put a quarter in the jar. Wasn't healthy enough to go today, but probably when they come back home, I would expect that he might be ready.
Yeah. Viren with the awesome reminder that tonight's Firebirds game against the Barracuda is free on AHL TV. So that is fantastic. Everybody go check that out. If you've got the time, you want to check out the Firebirds, how they're doing. Ricky, this team's a year away from going after a big fish free agent. Need to find out which of their prospects are going to be ready. Problem is, I don't think next year really lets you do that. Like, a lot of their prospects are more than a year out is the problem. Like, Shane will be here next year. Riker's going to be here next year. Nobody else is going to be here next year. Like, you still need, with, you know, Yanni Newman, he needs a year or two in Coachella Valley to adjust to the North American game, get his skating better. Jagger Furkus needs a year or two to add weight. David Boyette's going to need a year at the AHL level to improve. I mean, Ryan Winterton maybe could be added to the list of Shane and Riker, but for the most part, you're looking at more than a year out. And so that's where I think the team, if there was somebody in free agency, should go after somebody in free agency, but there's not. So they're kind of in a position where they're going to have to wait a year anyway.
Right.
What makes me happy despite the loss is that I feel like we've had consistent games from Zoe. I love that you bring this up, Zoe, because I think that's what I was trying to get at. I just didn't have the right word, consistent. Thank you for bringing that in, because that's very much what I was talking about at the beginning of this one, RJ, was just the Kraken. I mean, they were able to carry a lot of the stuff over from the last game. And like we said, it's boring, but it's effective.
Right. I mean, you look at their big win streak earlier in the season. You could really say that about it. It's boring, but it's effective. I just think we didn't even really notice how boring it was because they just kept winning and winning and winning. And that is fun. But when the results are more mixed, I think we notice the boring a little bit more. But yeah, it's been a consistent effort. You can tell what the game plan is, what they're going for, what the identity is, how they're trying to play. And, you know, sometimes they're able to execute well enough. Sometimes they're not. But I'd rather have that than the inconsistency that we've seen from so much of the season, where you don't know if they're just going to come out and have one of their best games of the year or just not show up at all. I'll take this over that.
Definitely, definitely. Going to go ahead and do a last call here. Might close it up early, let RJ get some rest there. Hockey Fork, Pierre LeBrun is saying the Kraken are working on extending Wennberg possibly. Thoughts on that and how it would affect Shane? Certainly wouldn't be great news for Shane, right? What it tells me is then they would have to be open to the idea of Yanni Gord playing on the wing, because there's no way you could have it work where you have Matty Beneer, Shane Wright, Alexander Wennberg, and Yanni Gord as your four centermen. I really don't think they want to put Shane Wright on the fourth line, at least not for an extended period of time.
Right. Or thinking a little bit more outside the box might tell you that they would either be open to moving a Yanni Gord or, you know, for a blockbuster, moving a Shane Wright. I mean, we did discuss that a lot in the Armchair GM stream. But if you're bringing back Wennberg, somebody has to get moved out from the middle, and it's probably Yanni.
Yeah, agreed. For Turbo to be anywhere near the top six, he better learn to score on his point blank chances from Kervin Games. Agreed. I mean, that would certainly help for him.
Yeah, I've kind of given up on that. It's so funny how he's always, like, whenever the puck is about to leave the zone, he'll just fly the zone, especially like shorthanded. He'll look for those stretch passes. You don't always see it on the broadcast because up in the press box, right, you can see the whole rink. Usually he's behind where the broadcast camera is, but he is always looking for those breakaway stretch passes. And I just think, what's the point? So what? Even if they hit you perfectly, set you up for a breakaway, we know where this is going. I don't know why he looks for those as often as he does.
Yep. Zoe with another great point here. No angry man penalties from Dunn today.
That was good.
always a good game when that happens. Stratic, I don't know, I disagree on it all being more of the same. Like, Lindholm isn't a star, but he's an upgrade on Wennberg. Mantha isn't a star, but the Kraken don't have a power forward like him. I don't know that Anthony Mantha would really help out this team, but I know what you mean, Stratic. The problem is you're going to be giving up probably more than the upgrade is worth, right? Like,
you're going to be overpaying for whoever it is.
Yeah, whether it was through free agency or via the trade, you're giving up assets that are going to be worth more than the difference between Lindholm and Wennberg. And that's the situation that the Kraken find themselves in, is just that, yes, there are plenty of upgrades over guys. There is always upgrades above for everybody. It's just, does it make sense to pay the price to make that upgrade? And I just don't think that was going to be the situation with a guy like Lindholm. And so it's just a matter of finding those situations around the league. Let's see. Teams would give up a lot for Gord from SJ. They absolutely would.
Yep, definitely. Especially, they want to move him. They could get a lot.
Especially over the offseason, because then he'd only have 1 year left, right?
Yes, he'd only have 1 year left on his deal. So that would, I mean, for teams, that provides a lot of flexibility too after that first year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could even retain a little too, if it mm-hmm. made a difference in getting something really good back. So interesting. It would be certainly interesting. Anthony, after today, I think the Kraken have all three goalies over a 900 save percentage. What a time to be alive.
Hooray.
I still don't believe it. It's like we're living in the upside down or something. That just doesn't compute with me. Kraken finding their goaltending is the biggest success of the season. I agree with that from Ricky.
Yeah, definitely. You and I didn't think that was possible going into this season. We figured even if they played well, the goaltending numbers weren't going to look like this. But I mean, that's knowing that this is going to be the goalie tandem next year, that provides a lot of confidence.
Yeah. Let's see. Elizabeth saying get well soon, RJ. So I think we'll go ahead and wrap things up here. But yeah, I mean, look, it was a good, consistent effort from the Kraken. They came out hot. They just weren't quite able to beat Stuart Skinner, which still feels weird to say, RJ. But they played a really strong, complete game, close game against a very good team. I still think there's lots of good here, even though they didn't get any points.
Right. And if they continue to play this way, they should be able to kind of claw their way up the standings and into that wild card race. There's just so little margin for error right now.
Yep. Thanks, Christian. Christian sending more get well wishes to you, RJ. Hope
you
start
everybody.
Feeling a little bit better as the days keep going here. And we will see everybody next time, of course, after RJ. You got to do one thing for me, and that's point to the Flatstick Pub logo there below.
Oh, yeah.
So that
I can
we
do
can
that.
Remind everybody, go do that. Plenty of time still. Go have a fun Saturday night out at Flatstick Pub. Play some mini golf, some duffel board. Still have a good time. So definitely go check that out, everybody. And we will see you all next time.